So our guest today is Nate Lee. Nate has just released a brand new album, Wings of a Jetliner. First, we're going to hear Tobacco, and then we'll get right into our discussion with Nate. You know Nate, if you've been listening to Bluegrass for a long time, he'll tell you all the people that he's played with. Really fascinating young man. This album is going to do very well for Nate. I'm absolutely convinced. Here's Tobacco. Then we'll get right in with our discussion with Nate. There you just heard song Tobacco from Nate Lee's new album, Wings of a Jetliner. And I welcome today to Unreal Bluegrass, Nate Lee. How are you, Nate?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you, Steve?
Doing okay. Haven't seen you in a while. Used to see you a lot more, but currently nobody's seeing anybody except in pictures and music that comes across because we're all kind of stuck in one place.
Totally grounded. I can't wait till we're out there playing again.
Yeah, me too. I've seen you with, you came through town, stopped at the radio station with Irene Kelly, and I see you with Becky Buller Band all the time. So what the audience just heard, I'm going to talk about this album, Wings of a Jetliner, and we'll kind of bounce around, but we selected for them first Tobacco, which is there are five instrumentals. There's 12 songs on this, 12 tunes. There's five instrumentals. Tobacco is not one of those. It's written by a fellow named Dan Salyers, and I want to mention this too. You have basically kind of two core bands that appear on this album. One, it'll be essentially the Becky Buller Band with maybe Dan Salyers brought into it. The very first cut, Wonder Bat, is Todd Phillips, Bronwyn, Keith Hines, Ned, and Wyatt Rice. And, of course, you're on all of them. But the Dan Salyers wrote Tobacco Road, and I don't know him at all except that he sings harmony and wrote this song.
So I have yet to meet him in person. I knew of him because of his songs, and Dan Boner brought this song to me. He was real excited. He said, I've just sent you a Dropbox. I want you to check out Tobacco, go listen to it, and then Google Black Patch Tobacco Wars. And I did, and that was one of the first songs we chose. And Dan also brought Daniel in. There's three Dans in this on this CD. Dan
right.
also brought Daniel in to sing tenor, and he can sing tenor to a dog whistle. It's incredible.
Yeah, he's the one that appears periodically with either the entire Becky Buller Band or what I would call, same as number one, that whole lineup on the first cut, which is Wonder Bat. And they show up again, and sometimes Dan shows up periodically. But he's the one that features in and out. Good singer, and I did not know him, so you've explained to me how you got to this song. The song, to me, is I don't know about the Black Patch. To explain it a little bit, you must have been interested in the story. It's a really good song on the album, but I don't know the story that it's based upon.
I really was. I'd never heard of the story either. And so the Black Patch Tobacco Wars happened in the early 1900s, around 1904, that time. And the tobacco buyers, the Black Patch Tobacco was pipe tobacco and very lucrative. And the buyers got together and fixed the prices and put the farmers out of business, which then led to some nastiness on both sides. They ended up armed. So at some point, the farmers get together and they don't want to, they want to make some money and they're willing to fight for it. And the protagonist in the song, he's basically a scab. He's not part of the union. This particular union was pretty nasty from what I've read of the history. So it's just kind of, I don't know there's anybody in the right in this story.
Well, so far, as the song ends, the protagonist is sitting on 7 in the body count, and he's just kind of sitting there looking out, and he's still, I guess, waiting to see what's going to happen. I can't believe there wasn't a follow-up. He wasn't able to put, leave 7 widows and kill 7 people, I guess, are coming to burn up or destroy his tobacco patch. But at the end of it, he's still standing or at least sitting. It's an amazing story. I assume there's some truth into how this came about because I did not know it was. You explained it kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah, it really fills in a lot of the story, although Daniel didn't leave much to the imagination in the story, but it's pretty interesting stuff to read about if any of your listeners want to get into some cool history, I'd Google the Black Patch Tobacco Wars.
I think I will if they don't. So the album, you've sent me music before, and you have a lot of jazz, foundation in jazz, and, of course, bluegrass, too. The five instrumentals, They take on various shapes in this. There's some great singing. You do some great singing, by the way, my friend. I always knew you could sing because I've heard you do harmony and I've seen you do it. But on, I think, a tune we're going to play for him in a few minutes, somewhere far away, I just think your vocals is fantastic. I mean, your lead vocal on that and throughout, but on that tune in particular, it's a very, very pretty tune. We talked about the author a little bit off the air, Bradford Lee Folk, but really, really do a nice job singing. Of course, you're always playing, you know, mandolin, sometimes banjo. Your musicianship isn't incomparable, but I really appreciated hearing your voice sing and lead on this album.
Oh, well, thank you, Steve. I had a blast singing that one. It's always been one of my favorite songs, and Dan was a big part of making it the way it came out. You know, he's an awesome vocal coach, and he's just really in tune with the songs. As a producer, he knows the songs well. In fact, he sang scratch vocal on all of them while we recorded.
Oh, did he really? So, and for the listener, scratch vocal is kind of like your track that you build around, and then you might replace it with maybe your voice or somebody else's voice. Do I have that accurate?
Yes, yeah, he sang scratch from the control room so I could play my mandolin parts. It was really important to us to capture things as live as possible. So if I sang and played, then we've got bleed between the two mics. So we most of what you hear on the album is what we played right when we made the cut there, and then I went back and sang those.
And you're talking about a regular member of the Becky Buller Band with you and someone that you know very well, and the audience here is familiar with. And I call him Professor Dan Boner out of respect, and that's kind of what he goes by. That's the producer, right?
Yeah, Dan produced it, and he's been just a big part of me learning more about music ever since we started touring together. So it was kind of a natural pairing there, and he just did a fantastic job. He makes everybody so comfortable and ready to play, and just everybody was in a good headspace, and Dan facilitated that.
That's why he's the professor, not just because he actually is a professor, but I would think traveling with him would be a great bonus because you can just kind of pick his mind in between gigs if you're on the road.
You can, although we like to tease him because if you ask him a lot of the vocal questions you'll ask him, he always says, well, drink lots of water and get lots of rest. So no matter what comes up, you can be like, we're out of gas. Well, drink lots of water and get lots of rest is what Professor Dan would tell you.
The songs, Somewhere Far Away, off the air for the listener, we were talking about Bradford Lee Folk, who was on this show years ago, and he released an album by that title, and Bradford Lee Folk was actually on this show. I did not know that you played some dates with him, and that's where you picked up that song, which you do so beautifully, and I think that I've learned since then that maybe Bradford Lee Folk is not in the music business so much anymore, but I was glad you snagged that one. I recognized the name. I did not recognize that it was the title cut, but it's really beautiful. Your singing on this really just shines.
Oh, thank you so much, Steve. I want to add in there the co-writer on that song, Nick Woods. He's got a record coming out. This one isn't on it, but if listeners want to hear a different take, Nick does this song with kind of a 1950s groove, like not a bluegrass song. So if your listeners want to hear something totally different from the other songwriter, I'd encourage them to go check it out. Nick is a real neat guy and has a whole bunch of great songs.
Good. Thank you. I didn't mean to leave him out. I just couldn't read all of my note, but I remembered Bradford Lee Folk, so thanks for filling that in. You do something, too, with what would be the Becky Buller Band. On the tune, let me check here, All Along.
Oh, yeah.
You have unleashed Becky's vocals and Ned Lubarecki, who's just one of my favorite people for more years than I care to say, and I've known Becky forever too, but Ned's, you know, we'll just say it's more than 10 and less than 50. But you've sort of not only unleashed their vocals, and Becky's playing is on fire, but that song to me is like, wow, here's Becky really, really reaching she's a wonderful singer. She can reach every note she goes to. But that album to me is just full of, is very, very dynamic. Very dynamic, and the music and everything is just so well done.
Becky's vocal on that track was just stunning. We recorded that one. It was the last song we cut. We cut it with the Becky Buller Band late on a Saturday, our last day in the studio. And We got the track. I went in and cut my vocals while they got dinner. She came back with some fizzy waters for everybody and then just went in and knocked it out, and it was impressive.
Oh,
it was probably already 11 p.m., and she just goes in there and just starts wailing. It was really cool.
That's the only way to describe it. She's just wailing, and I'm thinking, oh, and I'm listening through it, and I'm thinking, every time she hits some of those notes, you know what I'm talking about. I don't have the second down.
Mm-hmm.
But you think, holy moly, it just raises the hair on your head that she hits them. And then Ned is just flying through some of these things. Ned, I have always said this, and I will say it. I've said it to Ned, which is embarrassed. I think Ned should be an automatic into the five finalists for Banjo Player of the Year every year. There's others probably too, but I just think that Ned should just be automatic. I don't see why there should be an issue about it. But his playing on that is some of the coolest stuff at a very high tempo that Ned has done. He's flying. He's run one of those runs he does. I'm thinking, wait a minute, but that's you've unleashed the power of those two on that one at least.
Everybody was feeling the energy of it, and you're right, it's very fast. We cut it at, I think it was 160, and for banjo and guitar, that is blazing fast. But Ned and Dan, it doesn't stop them. They just do it anyway. You know, for fiddle and mandolin, in my opinion, maybe because I play fiddle and mandolin, but it's a little easier to play at those tempos. And so a lot of guitar players would have sat out on that song. They would have played rhythm, of course. And a lot of banjo players would have been pretty scared of it.
Well,
you know, the two of them just jump right in.
Let's put it this way. A lot of banjo players would not have filled in the way one of Ned's runs. They would have found it more a less note heavy. I mean, that's this wonderful progression, and it's dead on. But I think a lot of people might have skipped over that and just kind of filled it with something else. You know the part I'm talking about. It's just a phenomenal
mm-hmm.
run.
I told him to do that. I said, play banjo in this part. So
he nailed it. And so let's back up then to Wonder Bat, the very first song, which is one that you wrote. It's an instrumental, and this will have, I will tell the folks again, not an uncommon setting or group of musicians for the album: Todd Phillips, Wyatt Rice, Bronwyn, Keith Hines, and Ned and you. And there are several instrumentals on the album, and we've talked about two of the songs that are not instrumentals. There are five instrumentals, but maybe let's touch on Wonder Bat a little bit. Quick Select is also an instrumental. We're going to, as we leave, as you and I depart, we're going to play Serenity, which is a beautiful tune. But let's start a little bit about Wonder Bat, since it's the first tune and the first instrumental on the collection.
So Wonder Bat was a song that I had started to write a riff for a long time ago. This was back when I was still in motorcycle mechanic school and just kind of viewed my music as a hobby. And I had made up this riff that isn't even in the final song, although we made an extended cut that I may release at some point that has it in there. But I revisited it. I keep all these little clips in my phone, some of them for years. And when it's time to write a certain type of song, I'll go look to see if I have something already. So I did. That song was intended to be one that, you know, my mandolin, a lot of people know, is called the Wonder Bat, and it's named after Homer Simpson's baseball bat. Go check out Homer at the Bat is the episode.
Well, and that's named after Wonder Boy, which is the bat in The Natural.
From The Natural, and
yeah.
I didn't know this until Ned told me that Sam Bush told him. They were talking about my mandolin, and Sam was like, oh, that's from The Natural.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Well,
so
in The Natural, it's Wonder Boy, so Wonder Bat is Homer's attempt at being Wonder Boy. That's what that is.
And now I know if I break the Wonder Bat, my next one will be called the Savoy Special.
There's those jazz references again. Okay, so Wonder Bat is the first cut, and you bring in I love when Wyatt Rice shows up. I love Wyatt's playing. I'm always happy to see him either put out an album or be on someone else's, because he's just, and Todd Phillips is as strong as a horse on bass.
Yeah, they make such an incredible rhythm section. That core band was built around Todd and Wyatt, and I had to have the tone of Ned. And with Bronwyn's fiddling, you know, I was thinking about the group I had. I thought, who kind of fits in that vein? I don't want somebody that's just straight up bluegrass all the time. I don't want someone that's only jazz, and she can do all those things and has a lot of Vassar influence. And you can hear that on Wonder Bat in her solos. It's really, really cool. They just hit it out of the park on that one.
Well, in that same group, this is not an instrumental, but on the tune The More I Pour, That's just basically a Texas swing to me. And so you have that same group with Dan Sallers in there adding some vocals. But so I think it's a pretty versatile group that makes up the group on one, and also they're throughout the album. But the swing is fine. When you're talking about Brahman, I thought, oh, yeah, that's her on the More I Pour.
We made those, I say we, it was mostly Dan that arranged it, but we stood in the control room, the three of us playing fiddles. And I don't remember exactly what order we took the hot rides in on that, but I was last. I remember that much. I think Dan was in the middle. Dan is such an incredible arranger of parts, and it was so fun putting that together. And I wanted to do that because I used to play in Western swing bands. I played in a band called Ted Scanlon and the Desperados and filled in some other situations. And the moment Tim Stafford sent that song, Tim Stafford and Mike Bumgarner wrote it. And
yeah.
It was one of the first ones I heard, and just immediately heard triple fiddles. And I was like, Dan, we're doing this. It's going to be Western swing.
That's a good indication of there are all kinds of music. There's all kinds of music on this. Some of the instrumentals are just really pretty. You know, and then you have swing. You have the very, very up tempo all along. The Somewhere Far Away we've discussed a little bit. But there's a great selection of music. I don't think you did it, Nate, just to say I'm going to put a smattering of all kinds on here. I think all these things fit together.
You know, this CD is a product of reining in the smatterings of things. It could have been way less focused than it is. So there were a few things that made the final, the shorter list that I decided, you know, I got to try to keep this in some kind of a lane. It's just a wide lane. I'm going to take my half out of the middle on this one.
I like that approach. Oh, by the way, the name of the album is Wings of a Jetliner. If you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Nate Lee. Who's everywhere. So Nate's released a solo album on, I guess eventually they'll find it on thenatelee.com, your website. If they just Google thenatelee.com, is it available yet?
It can be pre-ordered there on the website. It'll be out on June 12th, and two of the songs have been released on iTunes and those places.
Very good. The tune Miner's Grave, I want to skip to that, which is not an instrumental, but I like that compared to Tobacco. Well, that's a great song anyway. It's the Miner's Grave, you can talk about it a little bit. It's kind of a guy who's shamed his whole family and a lot of other things wrong running Moonshine.
Yeah, that song was written by Ashley Cottle, a good friend of mine. I've played on some of her recordings, and she was the first songwriter I reached out to when I decided to record the album. And if you dig around, you can find an album she made a long time ago called I'm Not Fallen. And it's on there. We made it a little more old timey for mine, which is a pretty Ashley thing to do. She likes to play clawhammer. But I really liked, I wanted to do something of Ashley's, and I had a handful of favorites. And so I already knew about that song when she sent it. I listened to it again, hadn't heard it in years, and I wanted to do that one. The story requires a little bit of filling in the gaps. It doesn't exactly say what got this guy into the jail cell. You know, why are we here? And I imagine I always kind of fill in the story some myself, just because I want to have a clear story on my end what I think happened. So I'm imagining he probably either got into a gunfight or maybe
I hope so.
Just got in front of the wrong judge.
I hope so, because to the listeners, the protagonist in Miner's Grave is in jail from all that you read, and I think you're filling in the gap well, for running Moonshine. And he's going to be hung at a certain time. Whereas the guy in Tobacco, we know, has killed 7 people, and he's just like hanging around. He's not even in jail.
Justified not guilty, the judge said from his stand.
Yep, that's a tough one, but it happens. But that's a difficult one. The Miner's Grave, you play a little bit. You play clawhammer banjo in that a little bit, don't you? Do I have that right?
I do, yeah. My dad builds clawhammer banjos. His name's Chuck Lee. He's built over 700 of them, and I have 3 of them. And I played a little clawhammer on my EP a few years ago and hadn't even thought to do it on this one. And we were going over the song in Dan's office, and he said, you should play banjo on this one. So I picked up the banjo and embarrassed myself terribly. So then I went home and learned to play the song, and that's what's on the album.
I think just before we get too far away, I want you to introduce a song you selected before we began, which was, we already talked about Somewhere Far Away, but we can now back up and say this. I want you to introduce the song. We'll play that for the audience, but the name of the album is Wings of a Jetliner. You reminded me that there's a reference to a plane or a jet in that song, but also it may have other references. But however you want to introduce Somewhere Far Away, we'll play that for the audience, and then I'll come back and talk to you some more. So you set up Somewhere Far Away if we haven't already done too much.
Absolutely. So for Somewhere Far Away, that song has a line in it that a lot of that song really resonates with me. But I like to sit on my back porch and watch the airplanes. I don't get to see it that much. There's not that many flights anymore, it seems like. But I like to watch them from my back deck, and I really enjoy flying and the points game. Becky calls me the bluegrass points guy, which for your listeners, there's a real points guy out there.
I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. So.
Oh, well, there's a guy called the points guy who shows you how to maximize your rewards and get free flights. And I'm just eaten up with that whole scene. I like to get free flights.
Okay.
Most of this album, I listened to mixes on planes. I was traveling a whole bunch.
Okay.
And Serenity is one that I listened to just a bunch on a couple airplane trips because I couldn't stop. The things, you know, just an unfinished or an unmixed cut of it there in the beginning, I couldn't stop listening to Todd and Wyatt's groove and what Thomas Castle did on it. It was just incredible. Thomas Castle was the other mandolin player. I don't want to call him second. He's the one that took the solo. And that song is just an exploration into dog music, Tony Rice unit type of stuff, and it's named after the spaceship on Firefly. So in a way, that connects to the...
all these cool references, and the strange thing is I'm getting like 99% of them, so I'm thinking somehow there's a connection here. We'll play Serenity about the end of this part of the program, but we're going to sneak into, we've talked enough about Somewhere Far Away, we'll play that. Nate, we'll come back and talk to you more. We'll pick up a little more on Serenity and some of the other cuts on Wings of a Jetliner. I'm enjoying this so much. This is Somewhere Far Away. Now, the audience knows what we're talking about, Somewhere Far Away, which I think was a great, great vocal song for you. You're a much better... I guess I don't hear you, Nate, doing that many leads. I know you're in a band, and I know that sometimes you step up, but I just think this album really... Of all the great things, there's a lot of great things, a lot of great selections, great musicianship, but I think your lead vocal is really coming through, coming alive.
Well, thanks, Steve. You know, in the bluegrass style, we have this kind of apprenticeship model we do. And when I first started with Becky Bowler Band, all the vocals were taken. I had sung in bands before. And then we had a lineup change, and I started doing a lot of the harmony vocals, and also that left some holes in the set list for lead vocals. So when Becky said, hey, do you want to sing some lead? I said, absolutely. We worked in Sweet Alice Chalmers, actually, was the first thing we did there. And I really enjoy it. I really like to back other people up and help them sound good. And I really like that when we play with the Becky Bowler Band, the whole band backs up whoever is doing the song. So they like to back me up and make me sound good when I do my song, and I really appreciate that about them.
Well, now that you've mentioned Sweet Alice Chalmers, which is A-L-L-I-S, the 11th cut on the 12 that are on this album, Wings of a Jetliner, let's talk a little bit about that, and then we'll kind of bounce around some more.
So Sweet Alice Chalmers, your listeners are probably familiar with from the Country Gazette. It was written by Bill Caswell. And it was just always one of my favorites. You know, my first professional bluegrass gig that played festivals and stuff was the Allen Mundy Gazette. And we didn't do Sweet Alice Chalmers, but we did a lot of material the Country Gazette had done. And, of course, just traveling with Allen, you're hearing that banjo all the time. Ned is a total Allen Mundy fan.
Mm-hmm.
And so both of us couldn't imagine Sweet Alice Chalmers without the Allen Mundy banjo part. And I don't know there's many people who could have pulled it off. And Ned is one of them. We did it in a different key, so there was one lick he couldn't play because I sang it a whole step higher than the Country Gazette.
The of course, the story is about guy loses his girl, but he gets a tractor.
Yeah. He's basically got it made and still pretty bummed out. Got it made as in can make a living, and you know he's seems to be healthy, other than the bottle or two.
You mentioned Allen Mundy, who I am. Allen Mundy, and I've told him this before. He's the reason I went to law school. because I just knew it was ridiculous for me to try to play like him, and that's what I wanted to do. And it was the summer. It was like a revelation in the summer when Banjo Sandwich came out. And I thought, okay, well, this is absurd. I better go ahead and send my application in to go to law school because this is just nuts. You told me, by the way, and I first learned this from you. I'd heard this before, forgot. When you were with Irene Kelly, we were just talking around the studio, and you talked about Alan's guitar playing and his jazz chops that he had, which I have learned since then are pretty substantial.
Oh, man, he is an incredible jazz guitar player. He plays with just his thumb, playing all downstrokes, so he doesn't use a pick. Just all downstrokes with his thumb and chords and melody. And his phrasing just as a musician is incredible, and you can kind of hear some of that in his banjo playing. And every year at Camp Bluegrass, which is the camp I came up through, I started going there when I was 10, every year Tim May has what he calls the No Excuses Swing Jam. And there's no excuses. If you're busy, he's like, nope, no excuses, you got to go. And we go with usually me, Tim May, Steve Smith, Alan Mundy, and any other instructors who we can rope into it. And I just sit there in awe watching him play jazz guitar.
And for the
listeners, both of them, actually, Tim too.
I think it's more for the listeners. I think let's make this cut. It's more what I would consider from what I remember from what you and I have discussed is more of a Django style.
Yeah, it's his Alan's big guitar hero is Herb Ellis. I remember he used to have a picture of Herb on the wall.
Yeah, I love
and his
Herb
guitar
Ellis.
I think was the same model. when we play we're playing a lot more of the gypsy jazz repertoire, so it's not like the show tunes and stuff like that usually.
I've hit on a couple of the instrumentals. Another one that I just think is a beautiful, and I think he wrote Come Along Brown Dog, I believe, is an instrumental. I just think that's a really, really pretty melody. The instrumentals on this album, to me, are just real powerful melodies. They're nice and beautiful tunes, not songs. There's no words to them. And then some of the other songs have a lot of different features. But the instrumental on this one, I'm particularly talking about Come Along Brown Dog, I just think it's particularly pretty and well done.
Oh, thank you, Steve. I'm surprised we haven't heard that dog barking yet in this call. So I guess nobody's delivered any packages.
That happens a lot, doesn't it? Now everything hits the door, and I got my dog here's quiet, but it's like the door is now a big place to go to all the time. So is your dog named Come Along, or you just say Come Along, Brown Dog?
So her name is Cashew, and I used to be roommates with Ashley Cottle, who wrote Miner's Grave. And when I first got Cashew, I hadn't settled on a name. Those things take me a while. And so she called the dog Brown Dog because she had to call her something. And so a lot of people know her as Brown Dog. And the song is, although instrumentals don't exactly depict a clear picture, but the song to me is related to, I'll take my dog out, we'll play, and I'll call her in. I'll be like, come along, Brown Dog. And she will crawl so slow into the house at the pace of this song. And then she goes in and falls asleep and is flat on the floor.
It's like Yellow Dog in Funny Farm with Chevy Chase. The first dog he had was just never moved. You'll have to go watch that on your next trip on a plane if you can find it. But he's a farmer out in the middle. No, he's an author. He has a dog and just calls it Yellow Dog, and it just never moves. It just never moves. But that's all they ever called is Yellow Dog. So it's a really pretty melody. Okay, I understand the pace of it now, and I understand what you're communicating there. Speaking to Nate Lee about Wings of a Jetliner, and I've been a fan, Nate, for so long, and I enjoy everything you're involved in. You could be involved in things that I don't know of that aren't make it to records, but it doesn't matter. I like what you produce, and every time you perform with whoever, it's always an enjoyable experience. A lot of great, and the choices. How do you? I know Dan was helping you a lot in the studio and the production and people did, but do you choose the songs? Do you choose the tunes that are going to be the final 12?
I chose every one of them, but there were a number of conversations with Dan, you know, especially when I had like 14 and I wanted to record 12. There's those kinds of conversations, and you know, some songs I'd chat with him about, like when I first heard Tobacco, we were talking about the history of it, and he told me to go read it, and in a way he chose that one by telling me go read this. I think he knew I would choose that one. So I got the final decision on anything. You know, Dan's not the type of producer where you have to do exactly what he says. But he is the type where you want to do what he says. You know, he really knows his stuff.
He's playing mind tricks on you. He's got that Socratic mind trick where it makes you come up with the answer that he wants. That's what he's doing. I know that's what he's
doing. Exactly. You know, actually, come to think of it, I had 12 other songs picked out, and he waved his arm in front of my face. These are not the songs you're looking for.
These are not the songs you're That's good. I do. He was on the show when he released that really cool song, which was essentially about his father, and I've always enjoyed listening to him talk about whatever. I could just put him on the phone and say, "Tell me about the hardware you're working on," because he rebuilds these microphones and all these other components, and they're specially done with this kind of size wire. And you got, I have no idea what he's talking about, but he seems to be pretty knowledgeable, and he has good influence on you. Well, I want to talk about the last song on the album, "Love Medicine," that I want you to come back. We're not going anywhere, but I want you to come back and then let's do a little setup for Serenity, which you've already discussed. But the last tune on the album, last song, is "Love Medicine," which I think has a good message.
It does. You know, I first discovered this song back in October. My friend Chris Sanders wrote it, and you may be familiar with the band, the Hard Road Trio, with Steve Smith, Chris Sanders, and Ann Luna.
Okay.
And Steve Smith was one of my mandolin teachers when I was young. I still learn from him. So Chris has been a great friend. She's a fantastic songwriter. She decided about 15 years ago, I guess it is now, she'd never written a song, and she said, "I'm going to be a songwriter." And she was. She got good really fast. So I asked her, she records all her own material. She doesn't usually send songs out to other people. So I asked her, "Hey, if you have one to spare, would you send it to me?" And so she finished that one up. I believe she was still in the process of writing it, and she sent it to me. And this was long before COVID-19 and all that kind of stuff. And the song is written about addiction, but the lyrics could apply to any difficult situation.
Yeah.
And specifically that first verse, after I'd spent many weeks at home already, I started thinking about that song, and the first line is, "Draw the line, close the door, ain't gonna cross that threshold no more," which, I've got a baby on the way. That's the decision we made in early March, was ain't gonna cross that threshold no more.
Okay.
And here we sit until it's safe to bring the baby anywhere.
Yeah. It's a nice song. I think it's a nice one to put at the end of the album. I really do, because I do think you're right. It applies to so many things, but there's I get a positive feel out of it. Not that you have to have happy feelings listening to music, but I like the position of it being number 12. I like the way these things are lined up, and I think that's a good one to leave at the last.
We chose that one to be last because it gave everybody another run through the instrumentals. And I told Dan early on, I said, I want this to be a record with vocals, but I don't want it to be a record where it's only about the vocals, where you have just short instrumental turnarounds. I said, I want to pick, and I want the people I called to pick. And so that one, we put lots of, if there's so many solos, it's almost an instrumental with vocal breaks.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so we wanted to feature everybody one more time.
That's a good description. It's an instrumental with vocal breaks. I like that. I like that. Listen, Nate, I want you to... we talked a little bit about Serenity. I want to have you set that up, and then I'll let you go back to your busy, waiting for packages to deliver and waiting for the curtain to be pulled so that we can all go back to life when it's all safe and reasonable. But let's set up Serenity. I'll play that, and as we're playing that, I'll let you go back to your life. Thanks so much, Nate, for participating, for playing along with Unreal Bluegrass. I always enjoy doing this to people that I know and like, so you've made this very easy. But having said that, let's talk about Serenity.
Well, thanks so much for having me. Serenity is one that I wrote for, other than Come Along Brown Dog, everything else was either written or rewritten for this album. And this one started from, I'd reharmonized a Celtic song and had some chord ideas. And I'd always thought, you know, this is asking for more. And if I do more, I will have messed up the songwriter's song. So it was just a kind of an arrangement I had, and when I decided who was going to be the band, I thought of Todd and Wyatt and that rhythm section, and I thought, you know what, I want to write something for that rhythm section, and I had this song idea, so I took the chord changes and changed them up and started to write a melody to it, and we were arranging it, first time Dan heard it, and I said, hey, I was kind of thinking I'd like to do double mandolins like David Grisman did. It's got kind of that Grisman feel, right. Tony Rice unit feel. And I was about to open my mouth and say, and I want to get Thomas Castle to do it. And Dan said, how about Thomas Castle?
He's playing and, mind games on you. It's so obvious now.
It's, yeah, yeah, you know, I'm glad we had this talk. maybe you could talk me through a restraining order next.
Yeah, I can't do the mental one.
But the hot mandolin solo in the middle is Thomas Castle. That's me on mandolin at the beginning and the end. Played fiddle on it, and one of my favorite things to do is improvise and fiddle in minor keys and just let loose and play whatever, and it's tends to be a very meditative sort of thing for me. I named the song after the spaceship in the TV show Firefly, which feels like fits because Serenity is a happy place most of the time for them to be, but it's also pretty exciting. And, you know, the song really excites me when I listen to it. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm a leaf on the wind.
It's a great tune. We're going to play that. First, I have to say this. We've kind of been joking around, and this is a very informal process for me and anyone that's ever been on the show. But, okay, we have references to Serenity. We have some other space issues. How do you travel and be in the same bed with Ned Lou Bereke with his Star Trek and his Star Wars and his Doctor Who? Are you guys just sort of like your own little nerd club within the band talking about all these references?
Yeah, a lot of times, yes, and Dan is the president of the Nerd Club. Ned is the president of the Nerd Club. And Dan has to ask his wife what we're talking about. actually, a trip with Missy Raines filling in on the bass, and Ned and Becky and the Becky Buller Band went down to Texas, brought Missy with us once. They were talking about Star Trek. This was years ago. And I'd seen an episode or two, and I thought, you know, I like these people, and they're my friends, and they're all about this. So I'm going to watch it. So now I've watched most of the series, and so Ned has been very much an influence on my TV.
A couple years ago, he recorded the theme, which I just cracked. I play it every once in a while. I have a bit with Byron Berline when he was actually on an episode of Star Trek, which you maybe haven't gotten to yet. He played an extra guy in a red shirt who played music, which I think that means you're going to die if you're wearing a red shirt. But then Ned actually recorded the whole Star Trek theme. And it's just typical Ned, but I think you guys must have a lot of fun. I know you do perform with a lot of other people, but just from talking to you and knowing you and the other members of the Becky Buller Band, I think you have a good time. Or else, why do it?
Exactly. I do this for fun, and if it's not going to be fun, I'll just do something else.
Yeah, work on motorcycles. All right, Nate. Yeah. Nate, I'm going to let you go. For the audience, I've been talking to Nate Lee. We've been getting into Wings of a Jetliner. One more tune from that Serenity, which you've just described in detail, and then we'll play that. And I will say goodbye to you, and thank you so much for participating. I did enjoy it. Hope you did.
I had a great time. Thanks for having me on the show, Steve.
Thank you. And here is Serenity from Nate Lee's brand new album, soon to be released, Wings of a Jetliner. I'll see you later, Nate.